welcome to another edition of the Celebrant Talk Show. With this, not so much joined by Sarah Ed, but just in a rare occasion, joined by someone completely else, Tara Baker. Hello.
Hello.
Tell everyone, well, what do you do? What puts you in the podcast seat?
So I am the founder of Dancing With Her, and Dancing With Her is a publication that celebrates LGBTQ plus women in love.
I wanted to talk to you today about the language that... obviously, the language that a lot of us have been using, and a language that we should be using in regards to working with. This is my favorite phrase, purely because it comes from, and I can't remember which movie, but do you know the movie? They're in the plane, and it's an African-American actor talking to another African-American actor, and he talks about those people. And it's a hilarious comedic scene. I'm like, those people, sir? but, yeah, where we talk about those people. But I think the – as with – all of the marriage equality conversations, debates, blog posts, podcasts that have been occurring over the last few years, especially since marriage equality was delivered in December in Australia, that the conversation and the communication we have, it isn't only about talking to people that identify as different genders or people that have different sexualities to me, but it's actually about talking to everyone.
Absolutely.
And it's about just... dare I say, straight off the back, not being a dick. And so I wanted to frame the conversation today. I still stole this from my fishing friend in Vancouver, Sean Miller, from Young, Hip and Married. And he was on a podcast recently where he was talking about communication and how a married couple can have a fight about something, and they'll talk to their marriage coach or marriage educator about the issue. And just for example, just say the husband said something about the wife's nose. And he would... he would say, you know, you've got a such and such nose, and she would take offense at that conversation and back and forth. And they'll talk to the coach or the educator about the issue, and it would be all about the nose. And it's not so much about him or her or anyone saying anything about a nose. It's actually about not taking responsibility for how you've made your partner feel. And so that's something as a husband or a wife or a spouse you need to take responsibility for, is how your words make your spouse feel. But equally to our friends, it's a responsibility we've got to our friends. It's not so much about being right or wrong, it's about how do we make people feel. And that's the bigger conversation in regards to there's people who have had their relationships and their identities affirmed by law in December, and we're trying to find ways to communicate to them without sounding like a dick. I mean, there's a lot of well-meaning people who are innocently, accidentally saying stupid things.
Yes, the intention's there. It's yeah. Just disrespectful.
And there's complete dickheads who who are also saying the stupid things. So I'm not so much going to be talking to the dickheads today, because I cannot imagine they would have made it this far through the podcast. So today I wanted to talk to the well-intentioned people, those that look. I don't want to sound like an idiot, but sometimes I just do. And just as an opening question, you might notice I avoided saying the acronyms, because I actually can't remember the last few. Because for so long there was LGBT. We were like, and like, cool, four letters. I can remember four letters. Can you open up on the acronym and the progression from LGBT to where it is now, what they stand for, and how that word matters?
So we do use the term LGBTQ+. I use that term to identify lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and everybody else is what the plus stands for. And I think that is what can – it's something that can encapsulate everybody, I think. It's not always the case. Not everybody identifies as those different labels, but it is something that I guess the community uses within itself as well. So that's why we tend to use that. Another one that I sort of go towards is just sexuality diverse. And I would just use sexuality, gender, or body diverse people, because I think that really does bring together everyone in whatever terminology they use. But I guess in terms of that, not everybody might identify as the label that you might think they do. For example, I would identify as a lesbian. That's what I always have. My partner has always been in relationships with women, but she doesn't identify as a lesbian. She would identify, really, she just identifies as herself. If she had to put a label on it, she would probably use the label queer. And that's just for her own personal reasons.
We're in a place today where when I see someone in the street who hasn't got an arm, for example, it's obviously respectful for me to not mention, hey, where's your arm? and if they bring it up, or perhaps if you develop a relationship, well, what I mean by this is you become a friend, you develop a relationship with the person, you might get to a stage where you're like, hey, we've been mates for 10 years now. Where's your fucking arm?
Yeah.
Because they can come from a place of relationship. Whereas if I'm walking down the street, I don't just say, hey, dude with no arm, where's your arm? Because that's a disrespectful thing to say. And I would understand, I think most people listen to this podcast would agree that you don't just do that. Until you come to a place of relationship or a place of trust where you can exchange those stories and talk about what that means to you. I tell that story to come back to sexually diverse people. Just to ask a question for listeners, that when we identify people, because I've never called myself a heterosexual male, I'm just Josh. When people call it a gay wedding, or this is, I've got a gay couple or a lesbian couple, for example, like your partner who doesn't identify as a lesbian, how does that make her feel when those terms are used?
She's probably coming to terms with it a little bit more now because we get it all the time. Yeah. But in the past, she would probably rebut back and she would say, no, that's not who I am. And I guess it just pulls down who she is. It's not getting to know her or it's putting that label on her and forgetting about all the other things that make up Alia and who she is as a person. So I think you're right in that you don't need to ever make those assumptions. You don't really even need to use that sort of language, I don't think. It's a wedding. It's not a gay wedding. It's not a lesbian wedding. It's just a wedding.
Just a boring old wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I used to love it when you'd see I had a lot of friends in churches growing up, and they I'm a Christian plumber, for example. Like, what does that mean? You're just a plumber. Yeah. Yeah. So I think titles, I don't know, sometimes we use them in such a weird way. There's a million. I think even just following me on Instagram, which is a small handful of the world, there's gay wedding directories and gay wedding fairs and that kind of thing. Can you tell me about the term gay wedding? Because I've always personally tried to stay away from it, knowing that that there isn't a thing such as a gay wedding. It's just a wedding, and not everyone identifies with the term gay, because for so long, you know, there's even just the jokes like the gay in the village and that kind of thing. But gay itself is just one identifying title amongst many sexually diverse people. So how do you feel about the term gay wedding?
I wouldn't use it. I would just call it a wedding. You're right. It doesn't, even with our online audience, it's predominantly women who are in love with women. But even within that, I think that's only about 30% of women actually identify as lesbian. The rest identify as all different types of sexualities.
The term gay wedding, we should just avoid it.
Just drop it. You don't need to use it. I don't think there's ever a time where you need to use it. I guess the only time that I ever would is in terms of like SEO, and that's what people Google. That's what I would Google if
I was. You would Google that?
I would Google that if I was looking for something that represented me. Because when I Google weddings, it doesn't necessarily give me representation of my own relationship in there. So I would Google it, but I wouldn't put it on the face of everything. No.
That's such a strange, not a strange, it's an interesting divide. Because for so long, searching for just wedding or say Brisbane wedding or wedding celebrant, those search results wouldn't always be inclusive of you. And that means a few different things, and maybe you can add to this, but I understand it to mean that it's not inclusive of you as you see those photos or as you read those articles. Or if you even just read the intro or the about section, that's not inclusive of you. But also when you just search weddings, it isn't catering to your wants and desires as far as services that are being provided. Like, you don't know who are the people and do they support my relationship? Mm-hmm. Not that you like supporting your relationship is a weird thing for a wedding vendor to do, but are you not going to be an arsehole when I inquire and say, hey,
yeah,
can me, female name, and my partner, female name, have your services? And they reply back with something terrible.
Yeah, I think it takes away from that feeling of having to come out to your wedding vendors when you're planning a wedding, because that's how we feel. And I know that when Alia and I first started putting, you know, getting our wedding plans together, we didn't get very far. But when we did, that's something that we really were really conscious of, was having to come out all the time and ask if it was okay if we were a same-sex relation in a same-sex relationship, if that was okay with them. So if I was Googling gay weddings, it's eliminating that. I don't feel like I need to do that so much anymore. And if I do it, I'm not going to get a negative response from that.
We rode through genders pretty quickly there, and in no way is this podcast going to be one where we justify or explain gender. But I suppose I can open up the conversation that I wanted to lead on to you. Scientifically speaking, the idea of two genders is a dead idea. So regardless of faith or culture or the society we live in, as of, what is it, it's April 2018 as we record this, the idea of there being two genders is a defunct idea. And even traditionally, the idea of there being two genders is a defunct idea. You know, like at the time of the Bible being written 2,000 years ago, there was a single gender, and then there was the lesser gender, female. But there was only one gender. There was male, and everyone else was shit.
Yeah.
Because culturally at the time, that's how they identified genders. And then in the last 2,000 years, we've slowly opened up to the idea that maybe females could also be somewhat of a kind of a person we'd respect and recognize. And today in 2018, we've expanded that scientific understanding, and also expanded that societal understanding of gender. And we have and people identify as different genders today, and that's completely okay. We don't have to go through and explain all of them, but I know when I first met you, I think you identified yourself as cisgender.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, what does that mean? I don't know what that means.
That just means that at birth I was assigned female. And that's how I live my life. That's how I feel in my body. That's how I present myself to society, is as a stereotypical female, I guess. But you're right, there are so many different genders. And I think that it's a conversation, especially within our youth and our people that are, you know, in their teenagers and coming into society now as adults, there's even more. And people are discovering that about themselves every day. And I know that, you know, you mentioned scientifically. So scientifically, there's, you know, X and Y chromosomes, there's all that sort of stuff. But that doesn't include intersex people. And I think there's probably more than 60 variations. I might be wrong about that. But yeah. I think there's more than 60 variations. So I don't think that's an argument at all, no.
Yeah, if you want to go deep dive in this, if you email me, I can send you some links. But there's even the Y chromosome in evolutionary terms, the Y chromosome is an error in DNA. I read this fascinating article, thanks to Science Market podcast. I listened to him. He was just explaining how that the Y chromosome is an error. It's a malfunction, and thus we've evolved into humanity, which is a fascinating idea.
Yeah.
thanks to this DNA chromosome weirdness, and next minute we're human, yeah. And that's who we are, which is crazy. But are you able to maybe explain, just so when people say that I am cisgender or I am a few of the other, I guess, maybe some of the genders that people might not be familiar with, just what that means and what that means when people tell them that they identify as that.
So somebody might identify themselves as transgender, and that can be male to female, female to male. It doesn't necessarily need to be, I guess it exists on a spectrum. So it doesn't need to be 100 to 0. It could be, you know, 0 to 50 or 0 to 80. It's up to them how they identify. And what that just means is that they might, for example, be assigned female at birth, but they live their life as a male. They present themselves as male. Another one people might identify is non-binary. So if somebody's non-binary, that just means that they they see themselves on the spectrum somewhere. They don't really see themselves as male, don't really see themselves as female. It's just somewhere in between, and they're not choosing to live their life to that societal expectation, I guess, because at the end of the day, it's something that we constructed. Gender is something we constructed as humans. Gender and sex is two different things. One is chromosomes, one is something we as humans created to work and function as a society. So if somebody identifies as no gender, that's okay too. And they might use pronouns like they and them and things like that. And I think another good thing to point is if you don't know what sort of pronoun somebody wants to use, ask them. I know that it sounds really obvious, but it can be something that's, I guess, confronting if you've never done it before, if you've never asked somebody what their pronouns, what pronouns they use.
That's
on.
The question we ask.
Absolutely. So I say,
Tara, what pronouns do you use?
Yeah.
And you would reply?
I would reply she, her.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. Just so everyone listening knows, my hope with this is that we can just learn to use better and different language, and so we feel comfortable in asking questions as opposed to, you know, hop-skipping around. I know I was freaking out the other day because someone had their dog at their wedding, and I it was a small dog, and without really being awkward, I couldn't identify what its gender was. I wanted to identify with the dog and mention it at the ceremony, and it looks a bit female, and of course it was a male. The second I make the decision the dog's female, that's when the dog becomes a male. Mm-hmm. it's embarrassing saying things like that. So I think it's liberating to know that that people could just ask the question, which, as I say, like, it's stupid that we wouldn't have thought of that on our own, but I find a lot of celebrants and a lot of wedding folk often tiptoeing around these questions.
I think it's not even in weddings, it's just in society.
Yeah, exactly, it's just in society.
Something we weren't ever taught that, or I wasn't taught that. I'm only 29, so, you know, I'm not far out of school and things like that, and I was never taught to ask people what their pronouns were and that sort of thing. So, yeah, just ask if you don't know, and guarantee they're not going to be offended by it. They will be offended if you use the wrong pronouns and you make those assumptions and put stereotypes on them. They will be offended, but if you ask, they won't.
There's a celebrant in Victoria who is, I believe he identifies as gay, and his partner is as well, but they don't identify with the term husband, so in case you're not familiar with the new marital laws, that you from a gender point of view can identify as male, female, or X, capital X, X being inclusive of all the other genders, and title wise you can identify as a bridegroom or partner, and then when you're married your identification, your title becomes husband, bride, or spouse, and this celebrant didn't identify with husband or groom or partner or husband or spouse. Are there other terms getting around? Because I'm personally not familiar with other terms being used, but are there other title terms to be used in relationships that you're familiar with?
Not particularly. I think most people would just use partner.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. What damaging words have you seen? Because this is it's a celebrant podcast, and I know some lots of people in the wedding industry listen as well. What damaging communication and words and terms have you seen being used by wedding folk?
The most standout one is, it was actually before the marriage equality thing, but it was still something that was said that you probably wouldn't think would be said. It was a celebrant saying that it was an illegal wedding.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I would have never even thought of that if we were having this conversation. It's an illegal wedding.
Yeah. So that's something to think of, but even just, I guess, just making the assumption when you make an inquiry that you've got a groom waiting on the other end. I don't have a groom waiting for me. No. just making those assumptions, I think, it can be really detrimental to your wedding planning process, and that should be a really happy and exciting time for people. And it's just not for some, it can be really hard. You know, just using that sort of language and things that, you know, put you in boxes that you don't want to be put in.
So much of the wedding industry has always called the clientele of weddings bride, mm-hmm. or brides, to collectively call them. I know a long time ago I decided to not use that terminology because it gets used in a few different ways. In the contact form, for example, bride's name, groom's name. In the booking form, bride's name, groom's name. Even obviously up until December 8 last year, it was bridegroom and bride. I made the decision early on to not use those titles and just to not use any gender-related titles, just purely for an inclusive conversation. I feel this is an obvious answer for me, but I want to ask you, what should wedding industry people call their clientele? Like the people that pay them money?
People.
Oh, you're kidding me.
They're people. Everybody is individuals. And everybody should be treated as individuals, I think, and as people, and people that are making that conscious decision to get married together.
Yeah, that's good. I want you to say those words. I didn't want the podcast to fly by without saying that. I also identify my couples using the word couples. Mm-hmm. That's okay. Yeah.
That's okay, unless they're polyamorous thruple or however many there are. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. God, that's a whole other world.
That's
podcast. God help me. What about language said in marriage ceremonies? Have you attended any recently?
Not recently. Not since the changes, no.
Yeah, yeah. Well, have you seen any damaging or exclusive terminology used in marriage ceremonies?
I haven't personally, but I can imagine that it would happen.
There's lots of terminology in the world today, and it gets in marriage ceremonies where the introductions and addressing people exclude some people. So the first example I think of, and this is something I say, well, I have said at every wedding forever, and I'm working really hard to like leverage it out of my brain because it's just cemented in there. But I'll often address a crowd as ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. No. I think especially at a wedding with queer people in particular, because there's probably going to be a lot of people in that ceremony as guests that don't identify as a lady or a gentleman. But another thing while I was thinking about that was making the assumption that parents are going to be there.
Yeah.
And that parents are a mom and a dad. And making those sort of assumptions as well can be really harmful. And I know that particularly within our community, there are a lot of people whose relationships with their parents have broken down because of their sexuality. And the reality is that they're not there to celebrate their day. And that can be really hard. I know for me, it would be really challenging to hear a celebrant or somebody else there, you know, talk about the parents and things like that, knowing, you know, for me, there'd just be one parent there. And I'd be really upset if that other person was mentioned within that. So I think just being conscious of that.
I know for myself, when I'm conducting marriage ceremonies, without even talking to couples, without asking them, I would I've usually identify the crowd as friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
That's who's there.
Yep.
And my family's more broken down than most. And so I wouldn't ever presume mum, dad, anything like that. There was no mums at my wedding. I also never make assumptions about children. Like I've heard some ceremonies where people talk about, I just couldn't imagine this, but they talk about in the ceremony, like, and you'll leave here and like, not leave here, but like the next step is kids. Yeah. Which even for heterosexual couples, like it's not always the way. Like
I'm
marrying a couple soon and they're not having kids and that's no big deal. It's okay. Like,
yeah.
Particularly for me as a celebrant, like who gives a F about their childbearing desires or abilities?
Mm-hmm.
So I've always made a point to not kind of go down the children path. Not to go down the identifying family members path, unless of course there's, hey, please, can you thank my mum? So when given the permission, I guess,
yeah,
say, hey, my mum will be there, please thank her, or whatever conversation that might be, I'll definitely open up on that. But yeah, I've always made a point just to be inclusive of all those words. But yeah, the big one, as I mentioned at the start, was ladies and gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just remember as the Commonwealth Games was getting planned, that they were telling MCs to not say that. And there was this big uproar. Everyone's pissed off about something.
And it didn't it happened.
Did it happen?
I did go to an event.
Really?
Yeah. I went to a business event there and that was the first thing that the person said. Yeah.
Wow. How does it make you feel when you see that?
I identify as a lady, so I'm okay with it. But I am really conscious of people who don't. And I don't ever want to make somebody feel left out because of that. And I don't think anybody deserves that. So I'm really conscious of that. I know there's a lot of people that aren't. And like you said, it's ingrained in people. This is what we've been saying for such a long time. And we've never had those conversations about speaking outside of that. So I think it's important that we start having those conversations and be inclusive of everybody.
Can we maybe talk about some actionable things that people can do? Most people listening to the show have probably got a business website mm-hmm. where they're addressing people that are getting married. What are some language checks they could do on their
take
websites?
Take out bride and groom. Take out bride and groom from everything that you can. It's people getting married. And I know you're a big advocate for not just saying brides, but remove even just using one word. Yeah. Just remove bride, remove groom. I know that keeps happening and it keeps popping up and it's so simple, but people just skip by it. They're still assuming that there will be a bride at the wedding. There might not be a bride at the wedding. The same as assuming that you know, one person will be in a dress, one person will be in a suit, making those assumptions as well. So I'd do that and I'd check over my contact form and make sure that you're removing terms in there as well. But also using inclusive imagery is really important and doing that where you can and trying not to be just stereotypical in that and being really authentic in what you're doing and what you're sharing.
A lot of this is April 2018 as we record, so I'm not too sure how much more of this is happening. But there was a big push from December through January, February, a big promotional push for or to use the terms they use and the industry terms. They would always see a Facebook post for gay weddings, and we now do gay weddings, and we've already talked about that terminology. But lots of giveaways, free gay weddings, free inclusive weddings, free same-sex weddings. And actually we have to circle back to same-sex as well, because we'll talk about that in a second. But that promotional effort, which I understand many people just wanted to be nice to the community.
100%. The intention is always the right intention.
But I saw a lot of those things and I thought, look, we just wanted equality. We didn't want freebies and we didn't want to be devalued. Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of same sentiment you have when you see those freebies?
Yeah, absolutely. I see it as them trying to monetize. That's how I see it. Just be inclusive. If you're running a promotion, show images of all couples and don't use gendered language and, you know, be proactive in those sort of things, and it'll be obvious that it's welcome to everybody. I don't think you need to go out there and say that it's for gay weddings, and, you know, I don't think that's necessary.
I mentioned the term same-sex weddings because mm-hmm. That's gay weddings and same-sex weddings are the two terms people have used to identify those kind of weddings since December 9. Well, even before December 9, but, yeah, that was a lot of the terminology used. Because same-sex weddings isn't inclusive either, is it?
No, it isn't inclusive of people who don't identify as any gender, don't even identify in a same-sex relationship. I know that the laws are different state to state in terms of transgender people and being able to change their gender markers, and using the term same-sex marriage just sort of disqualifies them from everything. You know, they might identify as a male, but because they were born female, you know, they might identify in a heterosexual relationship because they're living as a male now and in a relationship with another woman, but can't get married. Well, they couldn't get married because of those gender markers. So I think that it's important to not use that term either because it's not inclusive.
As we remove same-sex weddings from our website, mm-hmm. as we remove gay weddings from our website, and we use inclusive terminology, it's possible that some people could come to our website or Facebook or social or whatever, and or even come to the fair, read our brochure, whatever, read our business card, whatever promotional effort we've got, and they might not know that we do run and operate an inclusive business.
Yep.
What should those people do?
I think it's in using that imagery and using those words and things like that. That's how I would read it. If I was looking at your Instagram, for example, Instagram, for example.
Thanks, Mum. and the Pinterest.
If I was looking at your Instagram and I could see that, you know, you'd married two women along the way or two men along the way, I'd be really responsive to that. I wouldn't need you to write that you do same-sex weddings anywhere or gay weddings or any of that sort of stuff. I don't even need to see rainbow flags everywhere. I just want to see, like, representation of people in relationships like mine.
I'm lucky. This isn't me. People who are in different relationships to what the law allowed to before December 8 last year, they had contacted me, and I'd say yes, and we married them, and we had a wedding. Unfortunately, at that point, no one was married legally, but I'm lucky that I've got those photos, and because of that, I've been attracting more couples that couldn't get married last year and can get married now. I married a couple this weekend. I married a couple yesterday. It brings me a lot of joy. But I know that there's some of my colleagues who they want to create those ceremonies. They do, even if their website or social maybe doesn't identify today, they may well have the best intentions to run an inclusive business. Mm-hmm. But they haven't booked that couple yet. Mm-hmm. And they haven't got those photos. Can you speak to them for a little bit? Like, what? Particularly as well, because gosh, I could imagine being two guys, for example, and I take a risk on this vendor, and they say, yeah, cool, I will marry you, or whatever service you provide, and awesome. Now we as a couple, we're having our wedding, and it's so good, and everyone's like, can I get your photos? And look, most couples I marry are totally cool with that, but also you don't want to be. You know, not everyone wants to be the poster child for inclusivity. Yeah, I don't know. Like, any thoughts around? Because obviously there's things like styled shoots. I think I feel a lot of people that were doing the free weddings or the free elopements, that was also part of it. Like, we're just trying to get that imagery. But yeah, have you got any thoughts at the back of that too?
I think you're right. If you can be involved in a styled shoot, be involved in a styled shoot. Make sure you're being authentic in that and using real people in love and things like that. I think other ways you can do it is even with, you know, we're obviously a site that is dedicated to same-sex couples. There's no harm in reaching out and, you know, writing a guest blog or being involved in the community in some way, any way that you can. There's lots of different ways you can be involved in the community. You're right in, you know, there was a lot of free photo shoots around all the marriage equality stuff. Over the weekend, I had the same thing. I had vendors who, you know, hadn't done that first wedding yet, but we're really open and inclusive to that. And they were offering their services for, you know, a reduced price or a free price, just to try and build that up a little bit. But you're right, not everybody wants to be the poster child. So
yeah, I know. I literally had a couple book me 2 months ago, and they said it was so nice to get someone who just wanted their business for them.
Yep.
And because they're having a private wedding, it's likely that they'll be, you won't see those photos on my social or my website. Just on a whole side note, for anyone who thinks that we as a celebrant or a wedding vendor deserve the photos from someone's wedding, we just don't. They've paid us for our services. if we get them, lovely, such a blessing. It's nice. But yeah, they, I know when they contacted me, they literally said, like, it was so nice that you weren't offering a free gay wedding, they said. And because they said, we just want our wedding to be valuable. We want you to do the same work you do for someone else. And, yeah, which, yeah, it was funny. I mentioned that to a friend at the time because everyone was doing, you know, free weddings, free same-sex, free marriage equality weddings, all that kind of thing. Are there any burning issues on your mind when it comes to the wedding industry and people who couldn't get married last year and can get married now? In fact, like, here's just an open term. Like, I don't, like, what's the collective term for people that couldn't get married last year?
People that couldn't get married last year. People who were in relationships that weren't, you know, we weren't allowed to marry legally. That's all we were. Yep. and generally people that have gone through a bit of a rough time to get to where we are at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, any, is there any kind of hot button things that you've got? Like, I need to tell the wedding industry this.
I think it's just to start looking at relationships and people as individuals and as couples, you know, not as dissexuality, and start being a little bit more inclusive. And not just in terms of sexuality, in terms of gender and different bodies is another thing that I'm really strong about, showing different bodies. You know, not everybody are skinny people with long blonde hair, and, you know, we want more representation as a whole of diverse communities, people of colour as well. Particularly in Australia, it doesn't happen. Like, we don't see that very much at all. and of people of different cultures, even though we live in such a multicultural society. So just start, being a little bit more inclusive and asking questions and talking a little bit more about it, because not very many people do.
I feel that kind of like the fictional person I mentioned at the start of the podcast that doesn't have the arm, they're probably very used to having the conversation about the arm. what's the most respectful way to begin that conversation with someone who identifies as a gender that you might not be used to, or a relationship that you might not be used to?
Yeah, I guess if you do have somebody around you that you could reach out to and are comfortable having those conversations with. But I think as a general rule, just don't make those assumptions. Stereotypes are so ingrained in us. Remove those when you're having a conversation with somebody. It's not up to that person that that's coming to you for your services. It's not up to that person to give you the whole history of the LGBTQ+ community. And don't expect that, because I think that some people do. I've never had a gay wedding before and now I've got one and I want to ask all these questions. Those people probably don't want those questions. So go online. There are so many resources online where you can go and learn more about the community, particularly about the community coming out of the marriage equality debate in Australia. There's resources online where you can go and learn about what that experience was like for people like me, and because it was tough, and I don't think everybody quite understands that just yet, but there are things that you can go out and read. And I mean, the internet's a huge place and there's so many things on there, and you could get lost for hours learning about it all.
I can imagine. To round out the conversation and to finish it up, are you able to share your personal experience going through the 2018, like how was that for you and Alia? Obviously it's going to go to postal vote happens, it goes to the vote, it becomes law.
Yeah.
How was your experience?
We didn't expect that it was going to be a thing. And I guess when we found out that it was sort of exciting, the opportunity that we might be able to have marriage equality. And I guess I live in this little bubble where I'm surrounded by love all the time and I get to see all these beautiful couples. And it wasn't until the day before the poster vote was, I guess, the results came out, that I was chatting to somebody at the Daily Mail and they asked me how I felt about it and I started crying. And I was like, maybe I'm not coping with it. It was really hard to have your relationship, I guess, put out there for the world to see. And even just walking down the street holding hands with Alia, we felt like everybody was always looking at us, and that it was this topic around our sexuality and not us as people. And it was really challenging. Of course, when it all went through, that was really exciting. But even with that, it came out with a number, like that postal vote. So there's still a large percentage that didn't think that we had the right to get married. So that's that can really bring you down. So the experiences have been, I think, hard for a lot of people. And it's affected some people more than others, definitely. I was at a fair over the weekend and it was still a real hot conversation for a lot of couples, about the struggle that they had gone through to get to where they are now. So I think people need to be really mindful of that.
Yeah, I know Sarah, who's usually with me on this podcast, she's told a story of, I believe it's a couple that might have, I think the couple actually hired her, but they shared the story of how on the journey to get to her, they'd inquired with a few celebrants and other vendors, and some of those people felt the need to say, like, no, I won't service you. More than that, let me tell you why.
Yeah.
Which blows my mind.
We receive that as well. We get emails about that sort of stuff as well.
Like, you dancing with her, like unsolicited, let me tell you why you guys suck.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I appreciate that they've taken the time to give me their opinion and they've come and spent time on the site and they've learned a few things. But we do. And it's not just, we are obviously a space where we like to be a safe space for people to be who they are and love who they love. But it absolutely still happens. There's still a lot of people out there with a lot of opinions about it, and that's in society, and that's also in the wedding industry.
You know, the biggest change I've experienced as a marriage celebrant, like a solo, well, Britt's my business partner, but a small team, is before this I worked in commercial radio for most of my life. And in commercial radio, even at the smallest station I've ever worked at, there was five of us. 20% of our team, one of the staff members, was a receptionist. There's always been a receptionist, which isn't a gendered role. There's different genders in that role. But there was a receptionist, someone who would take the phone calls, and early on they would do the emails. You know, what a crazy thing that there'll be a person who did the emails at the station. But there was an email person and a call person. And I think the biggest thing that I missed from that time is that the receptionist would take the phone call, and they'd receive the email, and I don't know what number, but I know that a large percentage never made it past the receptionist. That if a dickhead would call, he or she would take the phone call and deal with them and hang up or pass it on to a manager. And I often think these days, like, there's such a thin veil of protection between me and the outside world, and you and the outside world, and us and our couples, that it's very direct, which is one of the beautiful things about the wedding industry, that you can, I can email you and you can reply, and that's great. I don't have to go through your assistant.
Yes.
But I think sometimes it would be nice if that hate mail went through an assistant. It'd be lovely to have a hate mail assistant.
It'd be really lovely, yeah. It really would.
God, what a time to be alive. Tell us about Dancing With Her. Give us a wrap up on Dancing With Her and where you guys are, what you do, and maybe if there's any opportunities for Alison to get involved with you.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always opportunities to get involved in loads of different ways. We're really open to really anything. Nothing is out of reach for us. So we are, I guess we're predominantly an online blog, and we put together real stories of just stories of love, engagement, and weddings. We also have a print magazine. It's also in a digital version. We've just released our second edition of that just last week, so that's brand new.
I haven't seen it yet. Awesome.
I know, and I didn't bring one with me.
Mate, you had one job. Well, two
hot jobs. Off the press. And our, I guess we're a global publication in that, you know, our magazine's gone to over 40 countries around the world at the moment. And our online community spans almost every country. Not quite, but almost every country.
So good. I'm so proud of you guys. You're doing good work.
Thank you.
Tara, she's from Dance With Her. My name's Josh Withers. This has been the Celebrant Talk Show. As always, you can get on the email hello@celebrant.fm to email questions. Tara, what's the best way to contact you? Through the website? Would you like?
The website. So it's just dancingwithher.com.
Yeah. So if there's any questions on the back of this, now obviously keep in mind Tara is not representative of the whole community married last year. She's just one person. So please don't hate mail her, but maybe if they've got a small question, you can shoot her an email. And you've only got 120 unread emails now.
Yep, we've been hard at work today.
Hey Tara, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.